Welcome to Army Matters, the podcast series of the Association of the United States Army. I'm retired General Carter Hamm, the president of AUSA, and I'm honored today to be your host. Today's podcast is being conducted under what some call a new normal. Instead of sitting beside our guest in our studio, we're practicing appropriate social distancing. I'm connected to our recording studio by phone, as is today's guest, the Honorable James McPherson, Undersecretary of the Army, who joins us also by phone from his office in the Pentagon. Mr. McPherson has a long and distinguished record of service to our nation. He served as a military police soldier in the Army, and I'd note with some pride that he served with the 1st Infantry Division. He earned his law degree from the University of San Diego School of Law and served as a Navy JAG officer, eventually rising to be the Navy's Judge Advocate General, the highest uniformed lawyer in the Navy. After his Navy service, he continued to serve the nation in the Department of Defense. Beginning in 2018, he served as the Army's General Counsel. Nominated by the President to serve as the Army's number two civilian official, he was confirmed by the United States Senate on March 23rd of 2020 and was formally sworn in as the Army's 34th Undersecretary on March 25th. Mr. McPherson, congratulations and welcome. It's been
Thank you, General.
A week for you.
Yes, sir. As you were saying those dates, I reflected it was just a week ago tomorrow, as a matter of fact, that I was confirmed and then sworn in by Secretary McCarthy Thursday last week on a VTC call with all of our senior officers and units across the Army. It was quite an honor to do that and an honor to have Secretary McCarthy swear me in. Thank you. It's my pleasure to be with you here today, General.
Well, thanks very much, Mr. Secretary. Let's start right off with the current focus on the Army's response to the coronavirus pandemic. The Secretary and Chief of Staff have emphasized the continuing requirement to be ready for the many missions the nation expects of the Army. How is this pandemic affecting Army readiness?
General, great question. And as a matter of fact, in a VTC where we were having just about an hour ago, the Chief of Staff, General McConville, reiterated to everybody that was dialed in that the number one priority right now for your Army is to protect the force, to protect the nation. What that means is we have to ensure that we are ready to fight tonight. And even though we are also on the front lines, the federal response to the COVID-19 crisis that currently is sweeping the country, we also have to be ready to answer the call as we did on New Year's Eve when we surged our IRF forces, our immediate reaction force to the Middle East in response to the threat that was rising over there. We remain ready to do that. Readiness right now is a challenge, as it always is, but even more so now with regard to the stop movement and the social distancing. We are having to do training in new and out-of-the-box ways. We obviously have to be very careful on rotating our units through the National Training Center to get their training reps in. But I can assure you and every one of your listeners out there that your Army is ready to fight tonight. That's our number one priority. And our second priority, of course, is being on the front lines of the COVID-19 crisis currently going on. If I could just quickly give you a couple of stats on that that we are very, very proud of. First of all, it's the National Guard. Snapshot right now, there are 13,000 National Guard soldiers wearing the uniform that are out there on the front lines helping to fight this COVID-19 crisis. Most of them are in state active duty, a number on Title 32. As you know, state active duty means that the state is paying for that. And many of our states are strapped to begin with in their budgets. And as they exhaust those funds, we will be transferring those National Guard soldiers to Title 32 status, so that the federal government, that is DOD, that is Army, pays for them. In addition to that, we have deployed hospitals to New York and to Seattle. The one in New York at the Javits Center was open for business starting yesterday. The one in Seattle is receiving equipment and is staffing up today. We have about 500 Army medical providers at the New York City location of Javits Center and about 250 right now at the Seahawks Dome in Seattle that are getting ready to receive patients from local hospitals to take that strain off the local hospitals, general medical type of care, so that the local hospitals can step up their care for COVID-19 victims.
Well, thanks very much. At 13,000 is a big number. That's a lot of guardsmen serving their states and serving the nation. Do you anticipate, as this situation continues, at least until the end of April, as the president announced yesterday, do you expect that the use of the National Guard will increase in the weeks and months to come?
Yes, General, we are. As your listeners probably know from the news, the president authorized the mobilization of the Guard and Reserve in an order he signed last Friday evening. That's how we're able to transfer these Guard personnel to 32 status, We don't anticipate transferring them to Title 10 status. They'll remain in 32 status. That is, they are working for their governors, paid for by the federal government. But we also anticipate we're going to be utilizing and mobilizing reserves. One of the challenges we have, as you would imagine, for medical community, most of our reserve medical folks also work in the civilian community in their respective hospitals and doctor's offices and those sorts of things. So as we bring reserves on active duty to staff up our hospitals, we're very careful to ensure that we're not taking someone from a hospital that's working as a response to COVID-19 as a reserve officer, bringing them in and taking them away from that local hospital. We're not going to be doing that. We'll be carefully identifying only those doctors, nurses, and other medical personnel who are in the civilian community on non-COVID-19 medical practice that we'll be bringing into the reserves. So we're not tapping into that vital resource that the local communities have. As of this morning, we are identifying those individuals case by case, and we'll be staffing up those hospitals that can be staffed to the FEMA hospitals, field hospitals that are being stood up out there.
Yeah, that's an interesting perspective. I think that most people that don't realize that many of the medical professionals in the Guard and Reserve have civilian medical careers, which are obviously quite critical at this point. We also noted, Mr. Secretary, that the President has authorized the recall to active duty of select retired members. How's that going in the Army?
It's going very well. As a matter of fact, last count, we had 9,000. That is 9,000 retirees who contacted us and wanted to come back on active duty and help with the COVID-19 response. Obviously, we are focused, first of all, upon those doctors, nurses, and other medical personnel that are retirees. We're taking a look at them on a case-by-case basis. If they're in a retired status, we'll bring them back on active duty. We also have authorization to tap into the IRR, Individual Ready Reserve. And we've had individuals who didn't retire, but they served their obligated service, got out, they're doing something else now, but they are in the IRR. And they've contacted us as well and volunteered to come back on active duty. The President's authorization allows us to do that, bring them on active duty, the volunteers, on that basis. So we've been very pleased and gratified by the response from our retired community. We believe soldier for life, and the retirees are stepping up to that. General Hamm, you wouldn't happen to have a medical background, would you?
I don't. In fact, I think probably the last person that the Chief of Staff or the Secretary would like to recall to active duty is probably an old general. So I think I'll stay where I am. But if you need
yes,
me,
sir,
I'm ready.
Okay.
You talked, Mr. Secretary, a bit about the deployment of the Army field hospitals. Could you talk just a little bit more about what do those look like? And do you have any idea of how long they may be required in those key urban areas?
Yes, sir. The four hospitals that we have deployed, two to New York, two to Seattle, are fully contained. But right now, we're not having to utilize much of their equipment. Their equipment is being provided by the local community. So basically, it's personnel out of those hospitals, doctors, nurses, and other support staff. Now, those individuals are on active duty. Those are our active duty medical community. They're coming from military treatment facilities, from a number of different installations across the country. We are then backfilling them. As we say, we are leveling the force. Our Surgeon General is doing that this morning as we speak, identifying those MTFs that have forward deployed these physicians and nurses and backfilling them so that we have no interruption of medical care in those facilities on those installations that those field hospitals come from. In addition, that's one of the areas we'll be flowing reserves to as we identify them. So, for example, in San Antonio is one of those installations where we will flow physicians out of that to a field hospital. We'll then level the field and send physicians into Sam Houston to cover down on those vacancies that have occurred. Again, going back to our basic priority of protect the force to protect the nation.
This really is a great example of the total Army, the regular Army, the active duty Army, the Army National Guard, and the Army Reserve, and obviously supported by the great cohort of Army civilians. It actually makes you quite proud and quite confident, certainly from my perspective as an old soldier.
Every time I sit in one of these VTCs, we do a couple of days, you might imagine, I'm filled with pride as what I see the response coming from our Army. I've neglected to mention one aspect of it that is important, too, and that's our MRDC, our Medical Research and Development Command, located up at Fort Detrick. They really are at the forefront of what we call prevent, detect, and treat with regard to this COVID-19. In the area of prevent, they're working on a vaccine. As a matter of fact, they began animal trials about 2 weeks ago with mice, if you will. They're now moving that into monkeys, and they are anticipating having a vaccine online in rapid fashion. Probably won't be until the fall, but we expect that this COVID-19 is going to have what's called a boomerang effect. That is, it'll fade out as the flu season fades out as warmer weather arrives, but it is likely to come back in the fall. Having a vaccine to respond to that is going to be vital to responding to this crisis in its second wave or its boomerang. And MRDC has people working on that right now in conjunction with CDC and others, but they really are at the forefront. Second is to detect, and that is the test kits that you hear all about. MRDC is working in a number of different areas to develop test kits that are much more responsive to testing. Right now, the test takes about 4 or 5 days to get results back. They're looking at a test kit that will get your result back within the hour. And again, it's your army that's developing that. And finally, the treatment aspect of it. There are a couple of possible treatments that are online right now that they are testing, anti-malarial drug, which is very interesting. But again, MRDC and the research physicians we have there wearing army uniforms are the ones that are leading the fight against COVID-19 on the research part of this.
I had the privilege of visiting Fort Detrick last fall and seeing General Talley and the team up there, and I couldn't agree with you more. What an incredibly talented and dedicated group of Army professionals, both those in uniform and the Army civilians who are there. It is an incredible national level capability. Again, one that lots of folks in the Army don't know about, but a vital contributor, particularly in times like this.
No, they really do work behind the scenes. And they're the type of dedicated professionals that aren't looking for any glory. They're doing the work of our Army and our nation on a daily basis. Secretary McCarthy, we have VTCs with those folks up there periodically. Just briefly, we want to take them away from their work to just sort of level bubbles and see how they're doing. And every time we have a VTC with them, we come away from them thinking, you know, we're going to be okay. If our future's in the hands of people like that, we're going to be okay. They are just cool, competent professionals.
Yeah, absolutely. Again, makes the Army proud. One last topic related to the COVID-19 and the coronavirus. How is this affecting Army families? We've seen the notices about delays of permanent change of stations, some school closings, postponement of elective medical and dental procedures, the effect on child care centers. How are Army families being affected by this situation?
General, you sort of ticked off all those areas that they are being affected, and we recognize that, as obviously families are an important part of our formation. PCS travel has essentially stopped with the stop movement orders that went out, as well as TDYs and those sorts of things. We have families now that are living in temporary quarters. That is usually our IHG hotel provisions. We are looking at ways that we can help defray any costs that are involved in that. We obviously have household goods that have stopped movement. Again, we're looking at ways in which we can get that turned back on as quickly as possible and absorb those costs ourselves so there's no additional cost to families. Daycare centers, we're looking at shutting down. One of the things we did was ensure that when a state ordered daycare centers to shut down, there was an exception for essential personnel. And we view all our active duty soldiers and civilians as essential personnel, so those daycare centers can remain open with protections in place. But nevertheless, we fully realize that families are being impacted by this. Our installation commanders, our installation mission commanders are reaching out to those families on a daily basis and finding ways in which we can alleviate the trying conditions that they are under, along with their soldiers.
Good. Thanks, Mr. Secretary, for that comprehensive review of how the Army is operating in this difficult circumstances. If we could now, let's turn more generally to your role as the Undersecretary of the Army. For our listeners who may not be familiar with the duties and responsibilities of your position, what are your primary objectives? You are, by statute, the Army's Chief Management Officer. What does that mean, and particularly as it pertains to reforming the Army, which has been one of the Secretary's highest priorities?
And that's a great question. As the Chief Management Officer, the Secretary has delegated to me essentially the business part of Headquarters Department of the Army and the modernization effort. I don't do that alone, obviously. I have a tremendous staff, first led by Mr. Robin Swan of the Office of Business Transformation, and of course, my right-hand person, Tom Kelly, is the Deputy Undersecretary. I rely upon both of those professionals and their teams tremendously. But some of the areas in which, as CMO, the Secretary has asked me to take charge of, one is our cloud migration. We have an effort underway right now to migrate all our data that is currently held in a whole different series of servers, server farms across the country, as well as, if you will, spreadsheets that are contained in people's files, to put all that data into the cloud. First of all, to clean the data, make sure that it's good data, putting it into the cloud so that it can be used by all the users that have to tap into that data rather than one individual have the data at their fingertips at any one time. A couple of efforts that we're doing in that area, first of all, is warfighter. That's our number one priority, and we are putting data into the cloud in the warfighter area, and that is part of our multi-domain operations initiative. that we utilize that data from sensors to nodes to shooters in rapid time. And the way to do that is through cloud migration of the data and artificial intelligence. The other area is our business area for cloud migration, and we're doing that. We recently stood up an enterprise cloud migration office headed by a truly gifted professional, Paul Puckett, and his team, doing tremendous things right now of getting our data into the cloud where it can be more shareable. It can be more in synchronization with everyone who needs to access it. In addition to that, there are several other areas of Headquarters Department of the Army that the Secretary has asked me to take a lead role in. And much of it has to do with our modernization strategy, our modernizing our people strategy, modernizing how our ASALT and our Army Futures Command work together in the acquisition area. A lot of exciting stuff going on that we still focus upon despite COVID-19. Slowed down a little bit only because industry has slowed down a little bit, but we are still hitting on all 8 cylinders in every one of those areas.
Well, that's a pretty full portfolio under any circumstance, and particularly challenging in this current operating environment. You mentioned that the Army's people strategy, which was only recently published and kind of lays out the roadmap, if you will, for the Army on people. And General McConville, of course, has emphasized people first in his role as Army Chief of Staff. How do you support that priority, particularly with regard to Army civilians?
People are the keystone to everything we do. Our focus is really threefold. Our focus is upon our soldiers, ensuring that we have the right talent in the right place at the right time. We do that in a number of different areas. We started that with the assignment process just that we went through with how officers were assigned. That was successful. We just had what we called our BCAP, which is how we're going to select battalion commanders in the future. Went through that with our lieutenant colonels, majors and lieutenant colonels. That went very well. But also our civilians. Our civilians are a tremendous source of talent to us, a tremendous source of continuity. Soldiers rotate every 2, 3, 4 years. Civilians remain the continuity in whatever commands they're in. And we have found that we really need to focus more of our talent management upon our civilians, growing the civilian leadership of the future, as well as the current leadership, giving them more tools that they have to more effectively lead their organization. We're looking forward to having another SES conference, probably in conjunction with the event you're having in June in Austin, Texas. Fingers crossed that COVID-19 is behind us by then and we can travel, but we're looking at having that co-located with what AUSA is going to be doing in June in Austin. And the third is our families. So our people strategy really covers our soldiers, our civilians, and our families as well. It really is comprehensive. And as you said, General McConville reminded us when he became our chief of staff that our priorities of reform and modernization and readiness, underlying all of that is our people, and our people are first.
Thanks very much, Mr. Secretary. We're kind of nearing the end of our time, but if I could ask just one more people question. Army recruiting has had to adapt in this period of concern over the coronavirus. How's that working out? And is the Army going to be able to recruit the people it needs in this unusual circumstance? And for those you have recruited, have you had to change how basic training is conducted?
Great question. What we're discovering is something new every day with regard to the cohort group of people we try to recruit. That is 18, 19, 20, 21-year-olds. We've gone to virtual recruiting. So instead of having face-to-face contact with future soldiers, what recruiters are now doing is having that virtual contact with them through either Facebook or chat rooms or any number of different ways of doing that. And what they're finding is they're getting greater contact with a greater number of future soldiers than they did in the traditional way of knocking on doors or handing out trifold leaflets on the street, or if you will. So we're discovering that this generation that we are recruiting now, they're much more comfortable and much more used to having that virtual contact than they are the actual contact. So our recruiting numbers, we're not falling down at all. We intend and fully expect that we're going to make mission this year, even though we may have a couple of months in which recruiters will be doing it from home. Our recruiting offices are, of course, closed. We're also, we've shifted course, if I could use a Navy term, we've shifted course with regard to our advertising. Our advertising office located in Chicago is really deft at this. We are now increasing our recruiting among medical professionals. So the recruiting message that's going out is, if you want to help with the response to COVID-19, here's how your Army is doing it, and here's how you can join us and help us to do it. And we're stressing or ramping up in our medical community recruiting and having tremendous results of that as well. With regard to training, we've cut back on the number of recruits that we're pushing to initial military training, but we are still sending recruits there. We're looking at ways to, if you will, isolate them before they ever arrive at a MEP station even. But once they get into a MEP station, they go through that process. We are going to be transporting them instead of on commercial airline or buses. We're chartering conveyances to get them to our initial military training points. Once they graduate from basic training, they won't have the graduation ceremony we have in the past. They're still going to be, if you will, isolated. And then we're going to, again, transfer them to their advanced training sites, again, by charter buses, charter aircraft, so that we can maintain that quarantine or that isolated group, getting them to their next training assignment. So we are looking at different ways of doing that, but we are continuing to recruit, we're continuing to access, and we're continuing to train.
Well, thank you for that. One of the hallmarks of the Army has always been the ability to adapt to changing conditions. That what you've laid out clearly indicates that the Army of today is doing just that. Mr. Secretary, one last question, and perhaps the most challenging question of this podcast. You started as an enlisted soldier in the Army. You served a distinguished career in the Navy and are now back in the Army. You know, there's a football game in December that is pretty important to both services. Who are you going to cheer for?
Well, General, as I think I shared with you before, it took me a couple of months standing in front of a mirror before it became just the ability to roll off my tongue without even thinking about it. But I'm at the point now where I don't have to even give a moment's thought to go Army beat Navy. And I stood on the sidelines of Army proudly this past season, and I look forward to doing that again this coming season. But it's going to be a winning season, and we are indeed going to beat Navy come to that important game in November.
Well, thanks, Mr. McPherson. It's been AUSA's honor to have you with us for this podcast. We wish you and your family all the best in these difficult times. But I would tell you that we know that you are exactly the right leader for this critical position at such an important time. Thanks for joining us very much, sir. Any closing comments?
Well, General, I appreciate it very much. And as I had hoped, and I think I shared this with you, this is my first public opportunity as the new Undersecretary of the Army. I hoped that that public opportunity was going to take place in Huntsville last week. Unfortunately, that wasn't to take place, but it truly is an honor that my first opportunity to speak to the public is with our very important and key partner, AUSA, and yourself. So thank you, General Hamm, for this opportunity.
To all our listeners, thanks for joining us. Be sure to subscribe to the Army Matters podcast on iTunes and everywhere podcasts are found. The Army Matters podcast series is brought to you by the Association of the United States Army, the U.S. Army's professional association, member-supported, Army-connected. Visit us at AUSA.org for more information or to become a member. Your membership helps AUSA continue to carry out its mission to educate, inform, and connect with the total Army, our industry partners, and our supporters of a strong national defense. For questions or to provide topic recommendations, email us at podcast@AUSA.org. Have a great Army Day. Hooah.